Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I'm on Zoom with filmmaker Joe Basla. Hey, Joe.
Hey.
All right, so first of all, if our voices are uneven, don't blame me, blame Zoom. I know it records us and compresses us. I'm hoping our volume is the same. I try not to shout, but I kind of have this like deep, loud voice. So my apologies if it's uneven, or blame the engineers of Zoom. I don't know. But Joe Basla made the short film Grade A, which he brought to the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2020. And he took home what's known as the Programmer's Prize, which I'll just come right out and say it. Programmer's Prize means this film was so damn good that the head programmer, Jeff Howard, had to see that film get a prize. So, Joe, thanks for making such a great film. I think Grade A is hilarious, wonderfully written. Your lead actor, Michael Reitz, is unbelievably good. I just think it's a great comedic film, and thank you for submitting it.
Oh, dude, thank you, man. Thank you.
And then thank you also because your film became a part of the collective known as the Discover Indie Film TV series. And for people who don't know, if you go to Amazon Prime Video and you search for Discover Indie Film, there's a TV series that was born out of this podcast because I found out that the people making shorts didn't have anywhere really great to take them. Like, all the features would end up on iTunes and Amazon and sometimes Netflix and Hulu and this and that, but like the shorts would just go on YouTube or Vimeo, and it's like imbalanced to me. So Discover Indie Film is a TV series on Prime Video that is an anthology of just handpicked films from this festival circuit, just great short films put together in half-hour episodes. Sometimes there's two, sometimes there's three. And in one case in four seasons, 40 episodes, there is one film that has its own episode, and that is Grade A, because it's a long short, and it's hilarious, and it deserved it. So if you go to Prime Video and search for Discover Indie Film and go to Season 4, Episode 10. You got Grade A there all alone after the Discover Indie Film bumper that comes in front. And I'm proud of it. I hope people go watch it. And now we are going to find out what genius and madness drove Joe to become a filmmaker, to pursue film. I say that with love in my heart because I love that people are still pursuing this art form, and independent film is a really hard game, but people do it for love and for all the right reasons. So, all right, Joe, tell me your history. What got you into film?
Well, you know, I always just loved movies. You know, I was kind of at the tail end of the generation before like the internet was like dominating our lives. So I had a local video store down the street, and they used to do this thing. It was called the 555, and it would be like five movies, 5 days for $5. And you go in, we used to just really pick them off of the box. Like, oh shit, this looks cool. Like, you know, like, or some actor or whatever. But we didn't have the internet or like Rotten Tomatoes or like IMDb to really like check out and search for films. So I kind of got my senses going for what makes a good film, because I watched a lot of bad ones. But also, it was just like the storytelling. Like, stories were always just so much fun to me. You learned a lot from them. You laughed a lot. It kind of got your emotions going. And I really kind of latched onto that early. Like, this might be something I want to do, and something I want to be a part of. And, you know, when you kind of find out that that can be a possibility, like, people actually, someone wrote the movie, like, come out of nowhere, that, you know, it kind of imprinted that into me, like, okay, maybe I'll do this someday.
And was this like middle school you got started?
This was like in, man, I was like five, six.
Oh, as a kid, like your parents taking you there.
Yeah, no, they would take me like just like, cause I don't know. I was so like high energy, man. Like, I was just very like, I to contain like the energy I had, I could sit down and watch movies. Like, that was like, especially like adventure action sort of films at that time. Like, I was really big into Jackie Chan. I was really big into, like, I remember, like, watching Con Air on illegal cable, like, 3 times in a row. Like, those kind of, like, boisterous, confident, like, movies. But to be honest, like, dude, I was like, my dream growing up was to be a professional basketball player. And so it really wasn't until, like, that was like, that's not going to be a thing, that I really was like, well, I guess all I'm going to do then is movies. Cause I just didn't think, I never thought of, like, a traditional way of, like, I want to get a job, raise a family, this and that. I was just never geared that way.
And I didn't ask, where were you growing up?
Syracuse, New York, upstate New York.
Upstate New York, Syracuse. Very cool. All right. So yeah, the video store, you were well removed from the entertainment industry.
Yeah, big time, man. And it's just funny. You just, like, you did not think, it's just too completely different now. I mean, there's a movie studio now in Syracuse, like, in my hometown, that Jeremy Gerlich founded, who, like, wrote The Breakup. He directed The Wedding Ringer with Kevin Hart and Josh Gad. Like, this is a big guy. And he has a movie studio at a place that used to be a school. It's now a closed school. They shoot a lot of high school kind of movies, or that's kind of their vibe. But, like, I used to play basketball there, like, multiple times a week. And now it's, like, this movie studio. And it's just freaking weird, like, how, you know, now it's just come full circle that now they're just making movies there.
Yeah. Yeah. To go back to what you were saying, like, the 5 for 5, like, I actually do think that is a wonderful, probably, I don't know if it's completely lost, maybe you can do it with streaming, but just picking up, I assume it was DVDs, but just picking up 5 movies and bringing them home because it was really low stakes, like, low expectations, like, yeah, there's no expectation, just thrown on a movie. If it was great, great. If it was bad, you weren't mad. Yeah. That was a wonderful way to watch films, was the no expectations, don't know anything about it, and just discover what's on that disc.
Oh, totally. And the thing is, too, is, like, you know, you're just watching them. Like, the amount of time that, like, a couple or friends or whatever, or even just yourself, can waste trying to find something to watch. Sometimes you can watch 2 movies, like, in between that, you know, we were just burning through movies. Like, we just didn't, you know, there were no phones then. There was no, it was just, dude, we're going to sit down and watch this movie, and maybe it'll suck and we'll make fun of it, or maybe it'll be cool. And, you know, we'll brag to all our friends, like, dude, you got to go check out this movie that Chad at the Video King told us we had to watch. Like, you know, like, you used to have to go, like, the guy, like, it would be like this cool guy, like, this, like, guy, and be like, you were, like, in middle school or elementary school, he's, like, in high school, and he, like, knew all, like, the crazy movies. He'd be like, yeah, dude, you got to go, like, check out Fight Club, or, like, yeah, you got to go check out this or that, or, like, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3 is, like, cool for Halloween, you know, like, and just, like, these different things that, like, I don't know, it was, like, exciting. Like, you looked forward to it, or, you know, now it's a little bit more like, well, let's see, you know, what we can find, you know, or let's hope this, you know. So I'm really, and I've always been grateful to kind of get that experience before, like, the whole streaming thing took off.
For sure. All right. So you loved basketball. That's cool. Yes. And then did you ever play with a video camera? Did you get interested in film on that side, or wasn't till, when did you first either start writing stuff or playing with a camera?
Well, there was a friend of mine who, you know, we were really big into comedy. We were, you know, stand-up comedy, television comedy, you know, feature films, everything. And, you know, he kind of pushed me a little bit to, like, well, why don't you try writing something? So I was a junior in high school. No, because no one was writing anything like that. No one was writing movies. No one was making movies. It wasn't as easy to do it then. You know, my background was more like improv kind of stuff. We had a, me and my childhood friends had like a sketch team before there was YouTube. Like we were posting on like MySpace and all these random like websites, some smaller ones that weren't really a thing. But it was very like improv. It was like, there was an idea, but there was no structure. But to like, I didn't know the format of writing. I never read a book about it. I didn't know whatever. But I just kind of got into it and kind of wrote something personal. And then when I kind of decided to take on filmmaking full time, which was my sophomore year of college, I did end up dropping out to move to LA. But between the semester ending and me moving to LA, I made my first feature film, which was called King of the Neighborhood. And that was that screenplay that, you know, that, that friend of mine kind of encouraged me to write. I feel like I had my voice almost immediately in writing, only because I didn't grow up from like screenwriting books or professors teaching me something. It was like figuring out the language and rhythm of movies, you know. It just felt natural that something has to happen by page 10, you know, like by this, like this is where the character's thrown into an uncomfortable or new world, you know, or he's made his like choice to like commit to something. So it was, you know, it was tough because, you know, you're kind of, you know, depending on like yourself to just figure it out and keep yourself going. But I really enjoyed that I kind of wandered into it that way, being a fan first and a super fan, and then figuring like, oh, well, I can do this myself, you know?
For sure. And then, so you wrote that. So what, where'd you go to college?
I went to Tampa University for half a semester.
Tampa University for half a semester, and that's when you started writing and said,
I went down there for basketball. It's a Division II school, and they recruited me to go down and play there. And
so you were actually quite good, because you might say Division II like it's a put down, but someone who gets recruited for a Division II basketball team would have kicked ass on every high school team in the country, pretty much, would have been one of the best players. I mean, that's impressive. I'm just going to tell you, that's impressive.
Well, no, I appreciate that, man. You know, it was such like, it just didn't work out. And so I guess, you know, it's not like I regret anything or whatever, because I'm so happy with the way things turned out. But yeah, like Florida is just a different beast. You know, it really, like, especially when you're 17 years old, like it was the start of like the vodka Red Bull like phase. And like down there, and this is still something to this day, you would literally, and you could be underage, you pay $5 or $10 to get into these places, and you drink free all night. It's from a business standpoint, I don't know how that makes sense, but I just couldn't stay down there because I get so excited by things and I get excited by people. And this is another thing I like about movies, is just like you can communicate these bigger things in movies if you do them in a well-written way, in a well-done way. But I've always liked people and so I just couldn't last down there, dude. It was just, I was too excitable, too young, like just, to stay there. So I had to get the hell out of there. And then that was like the start of like, okay, I'm not going to do basketball anymore. I'm going to start, writing movies. And then about a year after that, I went to college in upstate New York at Oswego, and that's where I shot my first feature film, which was King of the Neighborhood. We shot it with a 2.5 person crew, because one of the actors would come on and off as helping me out with that. But it was me and one other guy, and we just kind of, we're stressed out of our minds that whole summer, but we never, by the time it was done, we both said that this was the greatest thing that we could have ever got done, because it's all worth it in the end if you really put in the work and you got it done. It's not a great movie by any means. I will say that. Like, it didn't matter to me. It was the fact that, like, I said I was going to do it. And believe me, I had a lot of people that were very negative about it. They thought it was just dumb and a waste of time and this, this, and that. And then I had a premiere in Syracuse at the Palace Theater, and 400 people were there. And it really, like, that night alone made it, how the quality of it, whatever, the time you spent, whatever, like, it just made it all worth it just for a night. And that's what I feel like, I don't know, like, movies can be, like, bring you the greatest reward, but it's going to take a lot of work.
And you did that all completely independent of any kind of college program. You were going to Oswego for whatever your major was.
I was a TV and film major. So especially when I went to that second school, and, you know, they taught me how to write a screenplay. So for me, after that, you know, the way I am, I was like, okay, so now I know the format. I'm not going to pay $60,000 to, you know, keep learning the four, you know, or to see how good, like, I'm just going to go there and whatever. And my advisor, she said, I didn't even have to, like, try to convince her. I was like, I'm thinking about dropping out of school and, like, moving to LA, like, nervous, like, 19. And she's like, please do. I don't want to see you again. No one ever does. Like, it's from a small, like, New York college.
And she said, I don't want to see you what?
I don't, like, want to see you again. Like,
oh, I don't want to see you again.
Yeah, like, in, like, a
chase your dream. Chase your dream.
Yeah.
You're only 19 once.
Yeah. And so that was, you know, like a first, like, adult that kind of, like, encouraged me to be like, yeah, dude, like, just go and do it. So, do I go now? And, dude, I was, like, there, like, a week later. You know, that's just how I am. Like, when I'm locked in on something, like, it's just total focus and has to get done. That just really, it's funny because, like, the smallest moment in your life that people might not even realize can have the most tremendous impact. And, you know, her name was Amy. She probably doesn't even remember me, but that little thing, like, made me feel okay with doing it, because everyone else in my life said I was crazy, you know. And sometimes you just need, if you have 100 people telling you you're crazy, if just one person encourages you, you know, that can be the thing that ultimately, like, leads you to where you want to go.
That's great. All right. So you made the move quickly.
Yes.
And where'd you land? Did you land in North Hollywood? Did you land what part of town?
Oh, no, I was by USC campus, and it was the first time I saw bars on a window, and I was like, yes, I am living in, like, straight out of Compton. This is awesome, dude. I was a big Boys in the Hood fan. I was like, I'm right by there. So I'm all my buddies who were big NWA fans. I'm like, I'm here, guys. So I was right there, and it was good for me too, because I was still around, like, younger people. Just kind of being around, it's a college, you know? So it was probably the best place, for me to move to, initially. And then I just kind of, you know, dude, just trying to start figuring it out. I was really balancing writing movies with doing stand-up comedy, because that was also something I started picking up doing. So kind of from that point of, like, 20 to 25, it was writing movie scripts and doing stand-up comedy. I was really working at both, but it seemed like stand-up comedy was initially going to be my path, because I was having more success with it. Working hard at both of them. But, you know, I was starting to get booked at places. I was going on tours and stuff like that, opening up for people.
So you got hired as an open. So you did enough open mics that you ended up, you moved up the ladder.
Yeah. And I met some really cool people. I was very fortunate. So outside of, you know, me pursuing this, I grew up in the LA bar scene, you know, and with that, you know, you meet a lot of people. And so basically what happened with me was I was getting good at stand-up comedy, but there was also this great place in Hollywood called Loaded, which is like a punk rock venue. And it was kind of this like, it just had this different vibe of your traditional comedy club. And the bar I worked at also owned that. And I got close with the people there, and they let me put on a comedy show there and an open mic that I was producing. But it got to be so big because it was just so unique. And so it's like punk rock, you know, stand up comedy, and you're not getting the typical crowd. So a lot of guys, would come down and, you know, would work out the material, like Joe Rogan and his guys, like Bert Kreischer and Tom Segura and like Sam Tripoli and Ari Shaffir and Ian Edwards, like this crew. Like, so I was really into the stand-up scene, and it wasn't until I went on tour that I was like, yeah, this is not for me.
Oh, so for you, the when you actually were touring, like as an opener or a middle or whatever,
yeah,
you were like, oh yeah, no, this is screw this.
Yeah, no, I
was it the travel? Was it the shitty comedy condos? Was it
no, dude,
the shitty audiences?
No, I listen, it was so cool because I've done shows for like literally three people, like a bigger, like a comedy, like, but there'll be like three people there, and I've done shows for 1,000 people. It's I did not like how I felt. Like, and I'll give you an example. Like, so I started to notice I was becoming less of a person, and I was analyzing things so much. Like I was not the comedian that was like, oh, you know, he's working out a bit right now. But like when people were talking to me, I was not listening to them. I was picking them apart, like, or something behind them. Like, you could be talking to me right now, but I might be looking at the guy, you know, behind you who's picking his nose, or, you know, this, whatever situation it could, like, I was so aware of everything around me that I wasn't fully living. And yeah, I did not, I know how much and found out how much it takes to become great. And I just wasn't willing to do that. And because it's 7 days a week, three times a night to become great. And you can read interviews with Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, all these people, they say the same thing. And it's really the truth. Like, anyone that you love that is a stand-up comedian did that. Kevin Hart, one of the biggest guys, same thing. You know, there is very, 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 I mean, it's like not even 1% of people just naturally were funny and just crushed stand-up comedy.
And, no, for sure. And yeah. And I got to say, so now I know two pivotal points in your life. And you know what's kind of amazing? And I say this as a middle-aged, older person, is you have an amazing ability to recognize when you're in the wrong situation. Like, yeah. Most people don't back out when something's wrong for them. It takes them a long time. And from Tampa to stand-up, you're like, when it feels wrong, you acknowledge it, you face it. You don't talk yourself into it.
Yeah, no, I just can't, I can't, man. I could never, I just was never like that. But that's also what, you know, hopefully should happen to you when you kind of go out in the world so young and you put yourself out there. Like, dude, I've failed so much. I've been hurt so much. You know, I've loved so much. I love people, you know, like, and so that was always the thing for me. I've never had a mentor. I've never really had someone to tell me like, hey, you should be doing this, or like, hey, that's why, like, I going back to my advisor, that 30-second little thing she had with me meant the world to me, because that was probably the most impactful, but also the lengthiest, like, kind of encouraging thing that I had up to that point. So for me, you know, it was always just being in situations at a young age and either failing or, you know, making something out of it. But I always knew where I felt and where I stood. Yeah, I man, I've always been grateful for that. Like, if one thing I will say about myself is definitely that, like, I will make a choice and I will stand by it. And whatever happens, happens.
Excellent. All right. So you tour for comedy and go, okay, this is not for me. And that whole time you'd said you've been kind of pursuing comedy and writing scripts and stuff. Yeah. So then when you backed off of it, you just went, or backed off of comedy, you just, did you start devoting yourself, like, trying to be a PA, trying to get on sets? Were you writing all the time? What was next?
No, I was writing all the time, and I still had some connections in the stand-up world that, you know, kept me at least initially going, or gave me back the spark of, like, writing movies. The guy I opened for on this Canadian tour, his name's Jason Rouse, is a very funny, he's nuts, but he's a very funny comedian. His fellow Canadian comedian is Russell Peters, who he was very close with, and he knew I wrote scripts, and he never had written one before. So he was like, "Let's write a movie for Russell Peters." And I was like, "What?" I was like, "Okay."
If people aren't aware, like, Russell's actually the biggest comedian on the planet. He's just popular in every country of this world, and he's known in the U.S., but he's not dominant in the U.S., but everywhere else he's the biggest comedian of the stadiums, right?
Stadiums, dude. I couldn't believe it, because I didn't even know who he was at the time. Like, I knew of him, like, I've seen some of his stuff, but not the magnitude. Like, he is a rock star in the world. And so, you know, this was obviously a really cool opportunity. I'm like, people ask me a lot, they're like, okay, would you write for television, or do you ever write with someone else? Me personally, I don't. I can't, and I feel like the screenplay suffered a little bit. Not that it was ever, like, guaranteed to become anything, just because it was Russell Peters. But it's just, for me, okay, I'll give you an example. When you see a movie and it's written by Joe Smith and John Miller and Greg this, and not like they're a team, it's and, the movie usually sucks. Like, it's all so convoluted. The pieces don't miss. The scenes aren't working. They're not fitting together. I don't know. Like, I'm more of a singular, like, vision person. And that's to say, like, I do like writing. Like, working with, I mean, filmmaking is this collective thing, and everyone is so great in their role. That's what's awesome. But sometimes in the writing process, if two people aren't on the same page, and one has, you know, written screenplays before, you know, and another one has or hasn't, you know, it's just tough to make a good one. And, you know, it was very much like, they wanted to be like slapstick, like PG-13, PG comedy, which isn't really my thing. I like more like human kind of comedies, you know, like the Apatow and Seth Rogen, those guys really like opened up everything, like, that you can make like these human comedies and they're going to be really funny. But yeah, that was really like the start of it. And it was such an interesting situation, but I'm grateful for it, because it really got my work ethic going, because there was deadlines. You know, when you have deadlines, it's different.
That's huge. So you did that, mm-hmm. and then you worked on that, but then you also were doing your own stuff on the side all the time, or?
Yeah, no, I was always writing something, because I'm something will inspire me, man. A lot of the times it's weird. It's music. Like, I'll listen to a song. Like, I wrote this 80s, like, action buddy cop movie called Hot Blooded, because I literally heard the song Hot Blooded. And I was like, what if some fucking cop just like loves enforcing the law. Like he's like a Mel Gibson Lethal Weapon type, but instead like he's just so like about the law that it's just so off-putting to everyone. Like he's like way over the top. And I mean, and that's kind of the through line through a lot of the stuff I write, is over the top people who care too much. And it's not that they have to adjust to the world. It's that, you know, they struggle with the world adjusting to them per se.
I mean, I was going to say you're describing grade A.
Yeah, no, dude.
Instead of a cop, it's a health inspector.
Yeah. Like I just dig that so much. And I think people appreciate that so much because, you know, when you go to a movie, you want to escape from it all, you know, like you want to just like watch someone else's life and be like, holy shit, this guy is nuts, you know, like, and you're just transformed into this different, you know, different kind of story. And that has always drawn me. And it's gone through like different phases, you know. There was you know, the Will Ferrell, like Jim Carrey kind of thing, you know, which I grew up on that, and that definitely shaped me, but I just took their extremism in a different way, that like they weren't so over the top that they weren't unbelievable as people. It was like, they're so over the top and they care so much and they're vulnerable. Like they're able to be hurt by people, and that makes a more human story, and people, you know, naturally become more invested.
Yeah. I was going to say too, Carrie, huge, huge fan of Jim Carrey. This is not at all what I'm about to say. I'm prefacing it that it's not a put down. It's not an insult, but Jim Carrey was always in the comedies, unbelievably hilarious in spite of the character. It wasn't that his character in Dumb and Dumber was, Ace Ventura. It didn't matter that he was a pet detective. He was just being over the top hilarious in spite of that job. Whereas you have someone, you like to write people who are crazy about their job. That's what makes them, you know, I'm delineating a difference that maybe didn't even need it.
No. But dude, no, like I will say, like, if I wrote a Jim Carrey movie, it wouldn't be Dumb and Dumber or Ace Ventura. It would be The Cable Guy. Like, that is my, and I was talking to someone the other day about that, and they're like, when I was a kid, I just didn't get it. I was like, oh no, dude, I did. Like, you know, like someone who just wants friends so bad, you know, like, isn't that believable? Like, isn't that, you know, like something that like you can understand rather than like just some maniac just shouting and going berserk over, you know, the most goofy thing. You know, there's a realism to that I sure think that people, you know, can relate to and have a much better, like, I don't know, movie going experience, I guess.
For sure. All right. So when along this line did you shoot anything before grade A, in between?
I did not, man. I mean, so I was about what, 25 when I stand up, kind of, I was like, okay, I'm done with this. I was trying to sell scripts. I was really focused on that rather than shooting something, because you do need, multiple people. You need, there's money involved. It's so hard to even make a short film. It's not just yourself. You have to depend on so many other people. And I think it took me a little bit to get to that comfort level that, like, no, if you like set an example and like you get the momentum going, you will get people behind you. You will. And especially if you take care of them, just from just a human standpoint, but also from a financial standpoint too. I've never had anyone point me in the right direction, or no one be like, hey, you should do this or you should do that. I was still like in the mindset of like the old school, is that, you know, the writers sell the script, you know, or like you're going to get an agent and do that. And so I was really toiling around in that for a while. I got optioned a couple times on one of my scripts, but I was doing a lot of cold calling, a lot of writing, and I just really wanted to get better. I wasn't too concerned really with anything else.
So what made you have to, did you just come across grade A? Grade A came out of you and you're like, I've got to shoot this one?
Yeah, well, so it just got such a great response. Like, I was just working one day at the bar, and I had this manager, Mike, and he's this like hilarious guy, and like he'd just gotten out of prison, and then he got this manager job with us, and he was as well. It's like his tagline was, you know, let me tell you something about prison. But his like thing was always like, he would tell you not to freak out about shit. And then like, he'd be the one freaking out. And one day, like, this was in Hollywood, the bar I worked at, some of the neighbors we had, another business, were like, yo, the health inspector is at our place. So like, you know, just like giving you a warning. And so he comes up to me. He's like, all right, dude, health inspector's coming. Don't freak out. And I'm like, all right, cool, man. I'm not freaking out. He's like, yeah, bro, don't freak out. I'm like, dude, I'm not freaking out. He's like, all right, don't freak out. Everyone get the fruit trays on ice. Like, he started losing his shit. And that's kind of where the idea came about. Like, okay, what if this health inspector like kind of took this shit so serious and also kind of used his position to like try to needle things he wanted, you know, which is very simple things. It's like I said, the most basic human things is like friendship, you know, love, like appreciation, someone to fucking talk to at the minimal, like the most basic minimal level. And that really, once like I kind of latch onto that, like the intention of that, and, you know, I wrote the screenplay in like 3 weeks. Like it just starts flowing after that once you're like locked into that zone. And then I started sending it around. But more than what the consensus was that people liked it, it was the variety of people that liked it. Like there were some agents that were like 60-year-old women. There were some, you know, 20-year-old guys liked it, you know, 30-year-old. There was such a mixture of people that really enjoyed it. And with such a character that I was not expecting people to get behind as much, that gave me kind of the confidence to be like, okay, let's start figuring out how we can get this made.
And was it like 30 pages or was it like a nine? Was it a feature?
Oh, no, it was a feature script.
Right.
And so we, you know, I just thought, and I was very close that I could self-produce this feature film. And mind you, this is from going from that two, I hadn't shot anything since me and that buddy did that two-person crew, haven't shot anything. It's just my belief and my imagination, you know, whatever. And we had like really great comedy people that signed on. This is what like sealed the deal, essentially, is there were some people I grew up admiring that signed on to act in this film for the SAG ultra low budget minimum, which is only $125 a day. We all know what actors make, and the ones that we see in the movies ain't making that. And their agents wanted them to do it because they thought that it was going to springload them into something else. I just, you know, as a 27, 28, I could not. Ultimately, I had everything set besides the Korean barbecue restaurants, and it wasn't easy to get them to anyone in like K-Town, or there's a few in Hollywood to let us shoot there. And the movie, which I don't even think you know about this, but it's the most important part, is the feature film's pointless without that sequence. Cause you know, we're from where we leave off in grade A, you know, he kind of goes off on his own journey after he fails at trying to get people to sponsor him. He's like down in his luck and he's like, you know, I'm going to go whatever. He goes to a Korean barbecue restaurant, cause that's the only place where like, you know, you can cook yourself. Like, it's like this total, like, he's just like down in his luck, whatever. And then it turns into he meets the owner of this Korean barbecue restaurant, and the Korean barbecue owner had this, like, this prophecy that he's going to meet this awful individual who thinks he knows everything about cooking, but he doesn't know shit. And his lasting, like, mission is to make him a good chef. So then it kind of turns into this, like, Mr. Miyagi student, you know, Daniel type of story. And honestly, dude, I think, you know, from what we see in the short, because the short is essentially the first act of the script, it gets better as it goes along and more human and more hilarious. And, you know, I'm still trying like hell to make sure that you and other people can see it. And, we'll see what happens.
Right. So grade A that I've seen and that everyone who's listening to this should make a point of seeing, we told you how at the beginning. So it really is. It's the first act of a feature.
Yeah, because I wanted to package something. I wanted it to be like, okay, like, here's a feature script, you know, and everyone has a script, but like, I was like, you can see it, like, see this, how it is with, you know, with great actors, with a great crew. And honestly, like, the first thing that I know when watching it on the Discover Indie Film Series, was being that it was on, you guys put it on Amazon Prime, the quality we shot in was finally able to be recognized, because we really used expensive equipment. We did not spare any expense on that. And it, you know, when you put it up on YouTube, they compress the files. They don't do that on Amazon. You know, it's a real platform. And man, like, that's been the biggest thing I've been grateful for, because people can finally like see it the way it is supposed to be. And I feel like it ultimately elevates the quality of the material.
For sure. And I want to jump back to something you mentioned, which is you said, some people that you really were into were game to do it, you know, for SAG low budget modified. Who was that?
Well, so Jason Mewes was attached, and I really grew up loving Kevin Smith, and, you know, he had a big influence on me.
Oh, I love Jason Mewes. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and he's got that wild side to him that kind of fits in with the stuff that I write. And David Arquette, who, you know, he made a lot of late 90s movies. I mean, I love Scream. I loved him, you know, Dewey and Scream. He's just, you know, a goofball, and then like Ready to Rumble. But he also has that kind of energy that I've always kind of been enamored by, that wild card type of thing. You know, it was so shocking to me that they would even consider doing it. You know, that was such a far fetched, that's what mostly kept me from trying to make it, is that, you know, you just don't think they'll do it. You know, like, why, who would think that? Like, you can call these people's agents and they're like, oh, well, we'll read it. Like, are you serious? You know, like, if you feel like you, like, I don't know, pulled one over on them, I guess. I don't know. You know, Hollywood has a way of making it all like seem unattainable. But there are a lot of people that really do care about making good stuff. And there's still some of them left, you know?
Excellent. Excellent. And then I just going to have to mention Michael Reitz, because yeah. I know we discussed it at the Q&A a year ago, when the film was at Sherman Oaks, which is that, yeah, you talk about an amazing lead performance.
Yeah. So, you know, he's so great, and he will never admit how great he is. I got 254 submissions for Robert, the lead role. And after like going through resumes and headshots and stuff like that, I think it was like 50 people that I had left over. He was the first video submission tape that I watched, and I just knew right away. And everyone fought me against it. some of the people I was working with, and they were like, oh, he's just the first one. Obviously, I watched everyone. I went through it all. But even after that, they weren't so sure. The thing is with Michael that he really got was in that everyone else didn't get. Everyone else was doing this very angry thing. They love the material and they love, they're like, oh, this is so much like Daniel Bryan and, you know, this and that. And they were going way too, there's no heart in it. There was no hurt in it. When Michael was talking and being the role and delivering the lines, like he had this like flamboyance to him that it was exactly how I felt he is that this character is a vulnerable, very in tune with feelings, like very like physical person with, like, I always would tell Mike that when we were filming, like, make sure you pop the face, like make them see how you feel, you know? And he just dominated that, man. Like he really did. And he is the most humble person you will meet, but I'm so happy that, you know, you enjoyed him because he deserves, I mean, geez, so much more praise than he's even gotten. And he's such a good dude.
He is. And I got to say, what keeps him on my mind too at times is he's real supportive when the series hit, he was like popping up on my Instagram that he was like promoting and saying, hey, this thing I did is on Prime Video. And, you know, not everybody does that, you know?
Yeah. No, dude, I'm telling you, he's so about it, man. Like he really is. He really committed. He really made me grow. I mean, dude, I came from the writing world and doing some comedy. I'm not especially a technical director. I don't know anything really about cameras and lenses and stuff like that. But I know this, I know the story. I know the character. And he just made me grow so much in that, of being a leader on set, but also how to act with actors. You know, you hear so much, you know, about these difficult, you know, almost like asshole, like directors who like, you know, believe in like, I don't know, berating people or this, that, whatever. It's like, dude, we're making movies. Like we shot this thing over 4 days and it was the best 4 days of my life. Like I was in tears on the last day when we wrapped because I didn't want it to be over. And it was people like Michael who, you know, made that what it was.
And those were an intense 4 days, I'm sure, because besides the fact that you were probably averaging 7-8 pages a day, yeah, you did a lot of locations.
Yeah, that goes back to the bar stuff, man. I mean, I've just been very grateful, very lucky to have met some great owners of bars and restaurants that allowed us to shoot there, and some had multi-levels, so it was very easy to pick and choose. Okay, we'll do this here and then we'll move downstairs. I just kind of went with my gut with it. I was, you know, the one regret I do have about Grade A is the technical side of it, the camera movements and things like that. It's the thing I'm most grateful for as well, because I learned so much from that. And now I know what I will do next time. We went in there and we were just ready to shoot, and we did not waste too much time on takes or whatever. It was about getting it done. And I feel like a lot of natural, just great material came from that. And just having your back on the wall and just saying, we need to get all these things done in this day and we're going to do it. And everyone was on board.
I mean, sounds great. And you probably shot it in 2019, I imagine.
So yeah, right at the end of summer in 2019. Yes.
End of summer. And then takes a long time, I assume. Post takes a long time when you're talking a half hour.
Yeah. Well, so another, you know, like I said, man, that was a point in my life where some friends came in with some really unbelievable favors. I had a friend who was the CFO of this big production house in LA, and I had co-written a script with him a few years back. And he needed some help, and he wanted to write a story and he needed some help and whatever. And, you know, I didn't even have to ask him. And he just had one of their in-house editors who literally does Netflix movies, HBO shows, you know, Oscar nominee type stuff. Like, they do the Avengers, bro, like Marvel stuff. And he was my editor on this. You know, it's why I always try to tell people, man, like always respect people and never burn a bridge, because you never know when you do something for someone else, or just you are who you are, that someone might want to help you out later on.
That's huge. That's huge. So you, I'm going to assume that post dragged into like the pandemic, like you didn't have it done before COVID hit.
No, we did.
Oh, you did have it done.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. Like, dude,
that's
like,
pretty quick. Oh, so not only was it great, but they got it done quick.
Dude, we were like 4 or 5 days a week in there for like 3 hours a day. Cause obviously he worked for this company. He has other, you know, much bigger obligations. But we just stuck with it. And, you know, he, at first it was a job and a favor. To his boss, but once after day one, two, he was taking ownership over it. He loved it. I remember he said something. He's like, "This is like a like almost like Peter Griffin in real life. Like this is like a caricature that I just hadn't seen. You know, you don't really see these types of roles. And I like it so much." And so, you know, that meant the world to me, obviously. And we just got to work, man. And we just dedicated ourselves.
That's fantastic. All right. So did you, get any screenings in before COVID slammed down, or?
No, just like friends and family type of stuff. And then, yeah, at some point I just started submitting and, you know, I lived in North Hollywood at that point, Studio City, North Hollywood. I spent a fair amount of time in Sherman Oaks, loved Sherman Oaks. And I was like, man, Sherman Oaks has a film festival. I'm like, it's definitely going there. And then here we are, man, you know?
Here we are, I know. And I bet at the time you submitted, I could actually look it up and tell you the day you submitted, but I was under this goofy impression. I'm like, we'll be back in the theaters by November.
Yeah.
So, right. So we had a virtual festival, you know, which it is what it is. And we had that one in-person hangout. We hung out. I don't know if you were able. Actually, you weren't able to make it, were you?
No. At the Galleria there.
Yeah. We just ate. We just hung out. Well, I said ate. We didn't eat. Everyone had masks on outside because it was November of 2020. So it was like, but you know, people came in from out of state.
Yeah.
Two people came. One came from Portland and one came from Austin, just because it was like, I've been dealing with virtual festivals all year and you're having an in-person mixer where I can actually talk to other filmmakers. So they hopped in cars and drove.
Wow, dude. Yeah, man. It was
really nice.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you froze, so I'm going to keep talking. All right, good. Might have been my internet, might have been yours. But okay. So what have you done since? I mean, did Grade A, you continued with the festivals for a bit, and then you moved to Nashville. I'll just come out and say, you moved from LA to Nashville.
Yeah, you know, the year has been interesting. I mean, since I submitted to your festival, I've written 3 scripts and a play. I haven't done much with them yet, other than just kind of send them around, you know, just opinions and, you know, submitting to maybe a few things here and there. But Yeah, I just, as much as everything is moving towards, you know, being online, I just wanted a little bit of a change of pace, be closer to family where I'm from in upstate New York. My girlfriend's a makeup artist. There's a big makeup. She's not going to really have any drop off in anything. And she was kind of pushing to move here. And, yeah, after the year we had, man, I was like, you know what, let's go check something out. Let's go. Cause she had been there for 17 years and I'd been in LA for about 9 or 10 at that point. So we spent some good time there. I love LA. I always will. I don't miss, you know, I'll drive 12 miles here in 12 minutes, man. That's, you know, not something you get to do, in LA, but I've really just kind of, I feel like I'm getting to the, as far as my skills go, to the kind of writer I want to be. And I'll never be where I want to be. You know, I'm always aspiring to get better. But I feel like I'm really starting to get a good grasp on everything.
And are we still looking at the possibility that you'll be able to complete grade A someday, or is it sort of?
No, I hope so. And I'm constantly telling people about it and to watch it. You know, the thing is that, you know, I've met so many people that have wanted to do something with it. I'll never give up on it. It's interesting. I just met someone who came in the place I work at Nashville here, and he started shooting the shit, and he turned out to be he's like a hedge fund manager, but he also works in film, and he's on some sort of board or panel at Sundance, and he loves grade A, and you know, started talking up this and that, and then just kind of went dead. So I don't mean to say that, like, my enthusiasm for it is always going to be there. I'm just trying to figure out, okay, do I still try the LA way, or do I try this Nashville way and try to find an investor here, and start something, because this city is growing so fast and there's not a real film industry here per se, like there is in New Orleans or Atlanta or whatever. And I think there could be just one as big. So I'm kind of teetering the line on that right now.
Yeah. And, I mean, it makes sense. First of all, I think we discussed it, that you have to keep writing other things and working on other things.
Yeah.
And, you know, keep grade A in your back pocket, and you can always show it as a proof of concept and proof of ability.
Here's the thing, man. I truly believe, you know, like you see these trailers, you know, be like, some critics said, this is the movie we need right now. You know, it's like, is it, you know, no, it never is. I think that grade A is the kind of movie we need right now. And that's what really ultimately, like, keeps me going, with it. It is just, you know, how many people have genuinely just like it, like, you know, like I've been completely humbled by you. But you know, to go with, we're getting away from movies that, you know, establishes a character who might not be the morality we want them to be, the leader we want them to be, the overall person we want them to be. And, but they're so passionate and they're so whatever. And by the end, they learn these lessons and they've grown. And like, those used to be the movies that we only watched, you know, was watching these people, like these crazy characters, just grow and learn. And it's like a shared human experience. And like, I just feel like grade A has that perfect blend of like surprising, like wacky humor, but also that kind of story.
For sure. And I mean, Noah, I think more than ever, it's being proven that no one knows what the marketplace wants. I mean, nobody thought that the marketplace wanted a TV show out of Korea where people go on a game show and die. Nobody was sitting around going, if I could only, you know, there was no executives going, if I could only get my hands on a Korean based TV concept, you know, like that. So, but I mean, as a human being who lived through, is living through what the world has offered since March of 2020.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just craving comedy, and I'm craving the kind of comedy that has refreshingly low stakes.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you're Robert in grade A, how low are the stakes, man? Like, he's so passionate. But, you know, the world is not going to live or die with restaurants. You know what I mean?
Like, it's
refreshingly.
Exactly.
Like, actually, in my home, we rewatch Tosh.0 and Letterkenny a lot night because we're like, we just want something like the worst thing in the world that we like the show Letterkenny. And like the worst thing that happens on Letterkenny is like, you know, like someone's going to like, there are no stakes, like literally their life, their beings. It's, I mean, whatever. It's just, so, I mean, it is, I think grade A is the kind of film we need now. And I wouldn't be surprised if somebody, you know what? Who knows? I would not be surprised if somebody said to you, you should adapt this to TV and see if you can write 10 episodes on it.
I've been approached about that. And it's funny. And that guy that I was saying, the headphones guy, was like talking about that, whether it's like film or TV. It's interesting because I feel like TV has now, or in streaming, has become this safe space because movie making has become such an algorithm. And all the real writers have gone to television because Netflix will say you can make any show you want because you're David Fincher or you're so-and-so. So that's always been an attractive, you know, thing for me. I mean, ultimately, I love writing movies. I like the start and finish of that and just having that one story. But I think with a character like Robert, where you, every scene, you don't know what's going to happen. And I write it that way because he's just an unpredictable person, you know, and that's exciting. Like when you don't know, like, what someone's going to do. And that also brings like an emotional like attachment because, you know, you're like, holy shit. Like, one minute this guy's so committed and the next one he's hurt. So he's doing this terrible thing. And, you know, you're not on balance with it. So we'll see, man. I mean, we're in some funky times. I mean, you know, we're now like got episodes of The Office being banned, you know, and it's like, that's the epitome of a show of like, one of the greatest comedies in sitcom like history or television history, but like just a freaking goofball who's not mean spirited, who just would learn through his mistakes. And I think when we start losing that we don't want to see people learning through their mistakes, then we're losing storytelling altogether.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually unaware of this, bit of news that there's a piece of that there's some Office episodes that got pulled. Really?
Yeah, Comedy Central has been like pulling some episodes I watched The Office when it was on. Like, it's been very strange. Like, it's so popular right now, but me and my friends used to watch it like when it was on its TV run, like call each other during commercials, you know. And we never like thought of any mean-spirited thing or anything. It was like, this guy is a dumbass who is like a good-hearted person. He just does all this stupid shit all the time, but he like cares so much. You know, he thinks he's the world's best boss, and like he's, you know, is he? I hope that like you know, stories like The Office and Grade A, you know, people won't want to, I don't know, move away from.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I got faith. There's weird adjustments going on, yeah. I suppose. I don't know the exact one, so I can't speak to it. I don't know if a word was used that Comedy Central's afraid of or whatever, but... And I don't even know who's streaming. It's funny. The Office is one I have not gone back to. I loved it first run. And I even loved, I don't know, I have this great fondness for when James Spader came on after.
Yeah.
After, oh, and he was Robert California. And I just thought that character was, I just thought it was so funny.
Yeah, the dry, like, look that he was giving the characters, like, do you really want to say what you're saying right now? And they were so nervous around him. And he was such a bullshit artist in the end. Like, it was perfect.
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, so I thought The Office was great, but, like, I haven't gone. It's funny. I went back and rewatched Parks and Rec and some other stuff. Maybe someday at The Office. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, all right. Well, I guess are we at the point where we should wrap it up and then do your four questions?
Yeah, totally. I got them here, man.
All right. Well, do you – if someone has watched – Grade A and they want to know more about you and it and stuff, website or Instagram or anything they should check out. I know you're not, I know everybody that Joe here has stepped away from the world of the cell phone, but he's still got a laptop. So
yeah, I'm still attached, man. No, listen, there's nowhere really that I'm not on Instagram. I'm not on Facebook. I'm not on any of that stuff. But all I would just ask is, man, just check out Grade A. And if you like it, maybe tell someone else to watch it, man. Or, you know, maybe they'll get a kick out of it too. You know, my whole thing for writing movies is it brings me so much joy, but like, especially when I'm writing comedies like this, it's just to make people like get outside of themselves and laugh at how absurd we can all be. And that's really it, man.
For sure. And I'll make this promise to anyone listening. If you, I sure hope you do watch Grade A. And if you watch Grade A on Prime Video and you're like, you want to say something to the filmmaker, you can go to Discover Indie Film on Instagram or Facebook. I actually never look at Twitter. So don't look at Twitter, but Instagram and Facebook, I have not managed to get them out of my life. So if you send a message to @DIFWins on either of those, I promise I can fire off an email to Joe and he'll get it. So
yeah,
you want to give
I got
this,
email, baby.
You want to give this young man feedback? You can.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
And as long as so now I'll just wrap us up here with the plea for stars. 5 stars, people. Give Discover Indie Film the TV series that's on Amazon Prime Video. Watch season 4 that the button at the end is Grade A in episode 10. Give it 5 stars on Amazon Prime. Give it 5 stars on Amazon.com. You listen to the Discover Indie Film podcast that gave birth to that TV series. Maybe you're listening on an Apple thing. Maybe you got an Android thing. But if you can give the podcast 5 stars and subscribe to it, much thanks. The world needs more kindness, so give 5 stars to things. If you want to learn about the TV series and the podcast, the website is discoveryindiefilm.com. Like I said, on social media, it's @DIFWins. And you heard Joe and I talk about the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. It's actually coming up in too fast. It's in like 5 weeks from now. It'll be the second week in November. And if you want to see some amazing films and you're in the LA area, you should check it out. But you can learn about that festival at ShermanOaksFF.com. On social media, it's @ShermanOaksFF. And it does have a sister festival that's every June, and that's Film Invasion Los Angeles. You can learn about Film Invasion LA if you go to filminvasionla.com, and it's @FilminvasionLA on social media. I'm going to thank Joe Basila again. Am I saying, is it Basila?
Yeah, you got it right, baby, yeah.
You got it right, okay.
Yeah.
Seemed like the kind of nice guy that if it's supposed to be Basila, you would have never
No, but you know, that is like the second, like, if it wasn't Basila, people say Balsa. So, but no, you got it right, dude.
All right. Well, thank you, Joe. Thanks for the chat. It was really fun. And everyone listening, Thank you for listening. And if you check out the podcast after this one in the Discover Indie Film podcast feed, you'll get to hear Joe answer the four questions, which include four questions about favorite films and things that are underrated and overrated. So it's going to be a good time. And I'm going to once again say the words, thank you for listening.